Water is everywhere. Living in Canada, many of us take it for granted. There are those that believe that we will not have that comfort for very long. Chickadee Richard is a First Nation activist who spoke to those who attended a teach-in at 782 Main Street on February 26th.
Quite a number of years ago, probably about 14, 15 years ago. Yeah, so there was a spillage there of contaminants that happened, and the people weren't told for 10 days. Oh, that really bothered me. So what happened was that we decided that we were going to do a protest in front of the AMC, and so people are saying, oh, you're protesting again. What's going on here now? And we knew the fact that, you know, if you contaminate the water, you're going to contaminate all life. You're going to contaminate the fish, you're going to contaminate the animals, you're going to contaminate human beings. And I remember talking to my daughter, she was 14 at that time, I said, what are you going to do? I said to her, you're going to come and join us? And then she said, no, I'm going to go to school. It's cultural day today. And it was Nietzsche Mapa. It's cultural day today, she said. And I thought, okay, well, I think about this. I said, think about the water. I said, without that water, there's no life. I said.
Now, I must admit, I have some bias when it comes to water. I cook with it, I clean with it, I drink it. I love to go canoeing in it. And, you know, I'm made of maybe 70% of it. So when we talk about poisoning it, I'm appalled. I spoke to Dr. Eva Pipp, who is a toxicologist and has done extensive research on Lake Winnipeg and is a professor in the Department of Biology at the University of Winnipeg. I was wondering about how regular people could poison water systems with a few things we send down our drains on a daily basis. In particular, I was interested in microbeads or nanobeads, which are something that I've noticed on health and beauty products.
It's mind-boggling. It's staggering, the large array of products to which these nanobeads are added now.
What are they?
Nanobeads are particles that are 100 nanometers or less in size, and a nanometer is about a billionth of a meter.
Can we remove it?
The answer is no. Answer is no.
Never.
Well, it depends what it is. If it's something that will decompose like oils, right, then eventually they'll break down. If it's something like these metal oxides and manganese, which is toxic, aluminum, which we know promotes Alzheimer and degeneration of brain cells. And so those things, they'll never break down.
I actually brought a bottle of this Dove Men Care body wash that was recently gifted to me to show Dr. Pipp.
I brought one of those stocking items. Maybe we could just look at the ingredients and kind of decide what's what.
Yeah, okay. So these are only the ones that they have listed.
Okay? Right.
So you have to be aware that according to the Canada Trade Secrets Act, they don't have to list everything that is in the product. And so these are only the ones that you list. Okay, so aqua, well, that's just water. But then the next one, sodium lauryl sulfate. Okay, right away. Okay, this is a product that it has been implicated in cancer. And things like hormonal.
There was a whole array of things
disruptors.
On the ingredient list. Petrolatum, a derivative of petroleum.
You may as well rub crude oil on, okay?
Acrylate copolymers, which don't degrade that well and are linked to cancer. Parfum, which could be a number of things. Dr. Pipp tells me that we should be concerned about the ones that are metal oxides because they cannot be broken down when they get into the environment. They bioaccumulate in the environment and in the food chain. Other nanobeads, like, that are carcinogenic. Scott Harris is the Council of Canadians Prairie Regional Organizer. He stopped in Winnipeg and we spoke about the Council of Canadians' perspective. Scott says, there is a real push of communities going to the private-public partnerships, something that Winnipeg pursued with Veolia.
It's something that we're seeing all across the country is a real push to privatize or to form public-private partnerships, or P3s, which is just another form of privatization, really. And from the federal level, what we're actually seeing, this is something, there was just a vote in Regina around this. And what we're seeing increasingly is that either federal or provincial regulations are forcing cities, and it's a good idea, and to increase the regulations on their wastewater, especially, right? And that means that cities have to pay for upgrades, but those requirements aren't coming with more money. And what the federal government and some provincial governments are doing is tying access to funding that cities can get to make the needed improvements to their water and wastewater system to applying for private-public partnerships. So essentially, the only way that cities, in some cases, can access federal dollars that they need is to go the privatization route.
Winnipeg will be spending $751 million in sewage treatment construction that will meet new provincial environmental license requirements. So now we know where our water is going, or where it will be going, but where is it coming from? Winnipeggers used to get their water from watermen who hauled untreated water from the Red and Assiniboine using ox carts. Thousands died from the tainted water that came in from the Red. So in 1913, Winnipeg voted on the overwhelming water problem. They decided to start construction on the aqueduct from Shoal Lake to Winnipeg. The city has lots of nice, flashy historical information on the aqueduct legacy, so I won't get into it. We'll start with what they left out. To build the aqueduct, they had to move a reservation, and in turn put restrictions on those who lived around the lake.
So for the record, could you say your community's name for me?
Iskete Zalgegon, Independent First Nation.
You're also next to Shoal Lake 40.
Right.
What's your position in the community?
I'm a band council.
Talk about the location of your community.
We reside right across from Shoal Lake 40, Shoal Lake Band 40. And we are on the mainland. Shoal Lake Band 40 has been, because of the water diversion, the aqueduct separates our two First Nations. And they are on a man-made island every day. You know, they cross the lake, you know, when at the freeze-up and break-up of the ice, you know, in the water. They are subjected to great dangers, you know, and they put their life on, they put their lives on the line every time they cross that lake.
So water brings life, but water can also be very destructive. Ask the people who lived at Lake St. Martin. Here's a clip from the documentary Flooding Hope.
In 1961, the first water control structure was constructed at the mouth of the Fairford River to protect Lake Manitoba cottagers and farmers from flooding. This impacted downstream communities, including Lake St. Martin First Nation, without warning or consultation. Slowly, the water levels rose, and more water was sent into Lake St. Martin, creating annual flooding in the spring.
I spoke to filmmaker Meryl Ballard about making the film. Dr. Ballard is a former student at the University of Manitoba and does her PhD research in natural resources and environmental management at the University of Manitoba.
Are you from Lake St. Martin?
Yes. Born and raised there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So obviously this is very close to you.
Yeah, it's close to my heart.
So obviously you didn't have to go too far to get your research together for this film.
No, what happened, why I got interested in it, because when I was growing up in Lake St. Martin, I saw the changes that had occurred over time. For example, every year the land used to be flooded, and when I was growing up, I remember just walking to the lake to go swimming and stuff like that. And we used to take up our cattle and to water them, to feed them, you know, on a daily basis. But eventually, my mom and my uncles sold their cattle because there was nowhere for them to graze anymore because the land was flooded. It was damaged.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know what's next for Lake St. Martin?
I'm not sure what's happening, but the people are suffering. I hope they listen to them and give them the land that they want.
And we'll finish off with Chickadee Richard.
So if you drink water, you're hurting the water. You have a responsibility too, just as much as we do, in protecting this water. This water comes from Shoal Lake, Ontario. And so we protested, we took a break, we sang. And then my daughter showed up. She had made this sign. And in this sign, she said, there's no water. There's no land, there's no life, There's no culture.